Brian Goldman is an emergency room doctor at Mount Sinai Hospital here in Toronto, and he's one of those pictures on the front cover of the bulletin. Now, besides hosting a CBC radio show, he has recently written a book, and the book is entitled The Power of Kindness: How Empathy is Essential in Everyday Life. He writes about how the biggest single issue between patients and their doctors is not medical incompetence. An even greater issue for patients is a lack of communication and caring. When a patient calls a doctor incompetent, he says, the doctor can usually brush it off, but when they call a doctor unkind, that's different. This hit home one day for Goldman some years ago. An elderly woman was admitted to the emergency department. She was suffering the advanced stages of a degenerative disease, and her family brought her in because they could no longer care for her at home. After examining her, Goldman couldn't see any compelling reason to admit her. The woman had been looked after well. She was thin, but well nourished on a pureed diet. She had no acute medical issues that required immediate admission to the hospital. She was not dehydrated. She didn't have pneumonia, and she didn't have a fever. Still, the family members, they were at the end of their rope at the time, and you know, Goldman just couldn't see that. He simply experienced them as very pushy and demanding. Eventually, he agreed to have her admitted, but he did so in a begrudging way, he says, even snapping at a family member when he asked one too many times about a referral. The internist on call followed through on the admission, and Goldman went on to see other patients, relieved to be done with the situation. Now, a few weeks later, the woman died. A few months later, the woman's husband wrote a letter to Goldman, and he accused him flat out of being unkind to the man and his family. He asked Goldman to meet with the family because he wanted to see if, in his words, a kind soul lurked under that abrupt demeanor. Wow, pretty confronting, isn't it? So what did Goldman do? He considered meeting the family with his advisor. Even though his competence was not in question, Goldman was troubled. He ended up attending the meeting alone. It wasn't an easy session. The husband came with all their adult children along with their spouses. Each took a turn speaking, giving Goldman a vivid picture of a vibrant and accomplished woman, a loving partner, and a devoted mother and grandmother. Goldman was devastated. How could he respond? Now, before I continue with this story, let me add another one. This is also a story about a doctor, not a medical doctor, but a doctor of theology. His name, Martin Luther. Luther is credited with being the father of the Protestant Reformation, a revolution in the late medieval church of the 1500s that created a break with the church. They were called Protestant because they protested corruption and abuse in the church. They protested a flawed proclamation of the gospel. They called for a renewal of the church based on a more authentic retrieval of the Bible and the New Testament vision of the church. The Lutheran Church is named after Luther, and in Switzerland they were called Reformed churches. Within a generation in Scotland, they were called Presbyterian, and that's where we come from. Now back to Luther. Luther was a doctor who diagnosed not ailments of the body, but ailments of the soul. And such diagnosis, it wasn't just something he did for spiritual patients. It was much more personal for Luther. In order to be a good doctor of the soul, he had to recognize himself as a patient first. The accusation of being unkind, of lacking sufficient love, it wasn't something others accused Luther of. For all intents and purposes, Luther was an exemplary human being and an exemplary teacher of the church. No. Luther's biggest struggle was within himself. Luther lived in a world, it's a pre-modern world, some call it an enchanted world, a world where people believed in God, they believed in the devil, angels, spirits of all kinds, they were all around everywhere. God could see all, even the deepest secrets and especially the deepest sins. Luther felt that he could never satisfy God's standards, that he was just not good enough, that he lacked the kind of love and devotion God required. This was also a world where heaven and hell, they were believed in vividly. Life was relatively short and often hard for most people. What happened to you after you died was even more important than what happened to you while you were still in this world. You could live for 40, 50, maybe 60 years here and now, but after you died, that was forever. So, satisfying God's demands and making it to heaven, it was of major importance. So the church guaranteed to offer the answers. They guaranteed to offer you the security you needed for that eternal destination if you were dependent enough and if you paid enough. Luther just couldn't buy this formula of assurance. Unless he felt at peace within, unless he felt real peace in the depths of his conscience, he could not find satisfaction. And so he was tormented. As Goldman was devastated by the accusation of unkindness from the family of his patient, as he was tormented by his having failed as a doctor according to a higher standard of care, so too Luther felt tormented with a spotty conscience and a failure to love God and neighbor as God demanded and people deserved. So how did Luther respond? Before I continue with the story of Luther and Goldman, let's dig into this theme through our scriptures. Our reading from the Apostle Paul to the Christians of Rome, it lays it out plainly. Let love be genuine, hate what is evil, hold fast to what is good, love one another with mutual affection, outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lag in zeal, be ardent in spirit, serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope, be patient in suffering, persevere in prayer, contribute to the needs of the saints, extend hospitality to strangers or refugees. Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep, live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty or arrogant, but associate with the lowly. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. Wow, it sounds wonderful. Please raise your hand if you've never failed in any of these, even a little. I thought so. So how do we respond? Let's look at one more story in order to frame that of Goldman and Luther and our own. The story in our gospel reading. There are three characters in this story. There's a Pharisee. A Pharisee is an important religious official, a leader of his community, someone of real standing. He's highly respected in terms of his moral character, his integrity, his uprightness. Then there's a woman. She's called a sinner. That means She has done something or lived a certain way that has brought shame on her. She is morally flawed and compromised according to the standards of that society, and the standards are set, of course, by people like this Pharisee. She's even shunned in certain quarters and treated with contempt. And then there's Jesus. The Pharisee has invited Jesus to his house for a nice meal. He wants to size Jesus up, and he wants to make an impression so that Jesus recognizes the kind of man the Pharisee is. He's got to rub shoulders with the right people. Jesus needs to know who to respect. But this high society dinner is disrupted by the woman. She has a need to find Jesus, and she throws all caution to the wind. She doesn't care how badly people will react to her wild and powerful emotions. She doesn't care that she hasn't been invited. She would never be invited to that kind of dinner with those kinds of people anyway. She's a fallen woman. They love God and the right kinds of neighbors. But here's the thing. The woman responds to Jesus in a way the Pharisee could never respond. The woman has been shown total love by Jesus. Regardless of what she has done or failed to do, Jesus embraces her as an infinitely precious child of God. And she? She's so full of gratitude, she weeps. And she kisses Jesus' feet, pouring ointment on them and bathing them with her tears, we're told. It may be crazy, it may be wildly extravagant, but it is a heartfelt, powerful expression of gratitude for love shown her. And how does the Pharisee respond to all this? He's offended, he's appalled, he's disgusted. This woman should not be in his house. He doesn't associate with such people, and Jesus, he should know better if he's the kind of man to impress truly upright people, people who count. But here's the thing. The woman carries shame, while the Pharisee throws out blame. The woman's chains of shame are broken by love, whereas the Pharisee's chains of blame only get thicker with more self-righteous blame and condemnation. The woman is full of gratitude and she expresses it extravagantly. The Pharisee, he's got no need in his mind and heart to be grateful, but rather he feels offended. What's the difference? What's the difference? Love is the difference. The woman recognizes her need for love, and she experiences it and receives it, and it transforms her shame into gratitude. The Pharisee, he blames and condemns, and he takes offense all over the place. And because he's closed to love, his blaming, his condemning, his taking offense, it grows and grows in ever more hateful ways. But here's the catch. To break the chains, you have to recognize you need love just like everyone else. You're flawed and you're broken just like everyone else. Whether it's more or less than your neighbor, everyone fails by someone else's standards and certainly by God's. Without love, we're finished. Can we absorb this kind of truth and live out of it? Now back to Luther and Goldman. Both are confronted by their inadequacy in loving God and their neighbor adequately. Luther carries a tormented conscience. Goldman carries the shame of being confronted by the family of a patient. They could easily remain stuck in their shame. They could easily fall into the blame game, blaming God or their neighbor for being difficult or impossible or flawed or, you know, deserving of poor treatment because they're just so difficult. In Luther's case, he also expresses anger at God. You know, God has set up these kinds of moral standards that no sincere human being can ever meet. But then, something happens. Just like the woman encounters the powerful, transforming love of God in Jesus, so too Luther and Goldman encounter the love of God. How does it happen? For Luther, it happens while he reads and rereads his Bible. He discovers it in simple words that he just couldn't understand before. He was just blocked from understanding them before. I am loved as I am, as a human being, even outside and before I have done anything to earn or deserve it. The biblical word for this is grace. Grace. Grace means gift. Love is a gift. It can never be earned, and if it is earned, it is a flawed kind of love. True love reaches deep down into us beyond anything we can ever do for it. And when we absorb it, whatever shame or blame or denial in us, it falls away. We're filled with gratitude and we develop a passion to love in return. This is the spiritual heart of the Protestant Reformation, of which our tradition here is a part of. It's the spiritual heart of it. We are, the formulaic phrase is, we are saved by grace through faith. Faith means trust. We trust this grace. We rely on it. We absorb it. We believe it. And so our life begins to be shaped by this kind of grace love. As we receive grace love, we want to share it, and nothing makes us happier anymore. And what about Goldman? He could have felt shame, the kind of shame that shuts you down and makes you go inside and hide. I'm sure we've all had some of that shame in our lives. He could have deflected the criticism by blaming the family, blaming the system, blaming the overload and exhaustion of having to cover so many bases as an emergency room doctor. And yet, after the family finished talking, Goldman found himself, as he says, crying. But the family were crying too. Rather than criticism, they were expressing love and tenderness toward Goldman. That's how he experienced it, love and tenderness toward him. They cared that he understood. And such love and tenderness, Goldman claims, slowed him down long enough to listen. And over time, such an experience was a catalyst for Goldman, changing many things within himself as a doctor and as a human being. The power of kindness, the gift of love called grace, the kind of love that can break through our hard-heartedness, our shame, our blame, our excuses, justifications, and denials. It's that kind of encounter faith in God requires. That kind of love is what neighbors need from us. That kind of gift is what our world needs more than ever. Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." May we find fresh faith in God's grace, and may God's peace within us flow outward in love to the world around. Amen.